Welcome to TechNet Radio, your guide to the IT universe.
Hey there, welcome back to TechNet Radio. I'm Aurora Queen. Thanks for joining me. Today is April 10th, 2007, and it's the second Tuesday of the month, which means we have our monthly security update. But because of the recent out-of-band release, I wanted to take the whole show today to talk to Mark Grieste. Kai Axford speaks with Mark about the technical details of the April security bulletins, and then they discuss the scenario that led to the out-of-band release of MS-07-017, and they also talk about responsible and irresponsible disclosure. Here's Kai Axford and Mark Grieste on TechNet Radio.
All right, well, I want to welcome everyone to the April TechNet Radio Security Update, and we're going to talk today a little bit about the releases that are coming out in April, as well as we're going to spend a fair amount of time talking about the out-of-band update that came out earlier this month. My name is Kai Axford. I am a senior security strategist with the Trustworthy Computing Team, and as you know, I travel around the world and talk to people about security, and today I'm going to be interviewing Mark Grieste, who's part of our security response team's communications group. So, Mark, how many releases are we looking at for this month, and what are they rated as?
Hey, Kai. We are looking at 5 bulletins that are coming out this month, 4 critical. 1 is important. We have 1 critical on content management server, 3 criticals on Windows, and 1 important on Windows.
Okay, great. So, Microsoft Content Management Server. Now, I haven't heard a lot about this. I mean, can you tell us just a little bit about what does Content Management Server actually do? Is it used for like a document management? Is it used for web content? Content's a big word.
Yeah, content is a big word, Kai. It's actually used for both. So Content Management Server, if you will, can be used for, you know, document management for things you want to publish out to the web. If you're solely doing, you know, document management, we of course have SharePoint portal server, which specifically does that. Content management server is more on the side of e-commerce, if you will, and deals with the ability to, you know, publish out, you know, sites that you might want to sell something on. But it also does just publishing in general for the web. So Microsoft's website, you know, Microsoft.com is published through Content Management Server.
Okay, cool. So what exactly is the risk we're mitigating with? What number is this? This is number, I believe 18. This is number 18. And what exactly is the risk that we're mitigating with MS-07-18?
So there are 2 things in this one, Kai. There are 2 vulnerabilities. One is rated critical and one's rated important. Overall, the bulletin's rated critical because we always go with the highest vulnerability rating when we rate the bulletin as the whole. The one that's critical is an issue of memory corruption. So there's a memory corruption issue that, if exploited, can allow for remote code execution on the server, which, of course, we all know is not something that we would want. The other one is important. The important one actually allows for information disclosure and allows for spoofing. So given the type of vulnerability that it is, it actually only merits a rating of important.
Okay. And when we talk about some of the things it actually does, I know it talks about cross-site scripting. What is cross-site scripting? Can you tell us just briefly what that is? Or I know it's a developer term, so some people might not be familiar with what that is.
Yep. So cross-site scripting, you know, as a vulnerability, is a type of vulnerability that can attack or inject script code into your session. So, you know, to not get too technical, kind of what that means is, When a page is building up on your site, a lot of times it's script, and script is just, you know, a type of programming. So it's just a series of instructions that the server uses to dynamically generate the page that you see in your browser. So what cross-site scripting as a vulnerability does is it allows for an attacker to actually take their own code or their own script and stick it in between the script that the server is trying to render to create your web page, and then the server will actually, in addition to running the script that it's supposed to make your web page look a certain way, it actually will run this additional code as well.
That sound good.
Yeah, so that's why we call it cross-site scripting.
Okay, and so to move on here just a little bit, the next update, MS-07-019, is actually addressing something with universal plug and play. And for those of you guys not familiar, universal plug and play is really just a set of protocols that really helps extend the plug and play to simplify, you know, use of devices in your home, businesses, et cetera. So what exactly is the scope of this vulnerability? What caused the vulnerability? This is another one that was rated critical, I believe.
That's correct. So this vulnerability has to do with a member corruption issue as well. And it does allow for remote code execution. So as Kai just explained, you know, universal plug and play is kind of a means of services that, you know, if you just plug something into your computer, it recognizes it and then gets the appropriate software to make it work, and you just are allowed to play with it, if you will, so plug and play. But what happens here is that there's a vulnerability that exists in that service that if a user were to go to a website or get something in email that is a specially crafted HTTP request, it's a vulnerability in how the HTTP request is granted and allows for, again, arbitrary code to then be run on the computer. And the issue is that the specially crafted HTTP request can cause a memory corruption. And then when you can cause memory corruption, then the computer is actually vulnerable to any code that gets injected into that piece of memory can actually be executed.
Oh, that's never a good thing. And so the next one, 0720, that has to do with the Microsoft agent and URL parsing vulnerability. You know, I've seen people use these agents before, and basically they're just these little kind of avatars, I guess, that kind of float around and really help you to kind of, when you're learning how to run the software and things like that. I've actually seen people, some really slick developers, make these agents talk and all kinds of little stuff. So what exactly is the vulnerability there and what systems will it affect?
The vulnerability here, you know, as you said, is in the Microsoft agent. And, you know, the agent is, you know, a software-oriented technology that actually, you know, helps you learn to use your computer. In this particular case with MS-07020, the affected systems are Windows XP with Service Pack 2 and Windows Server 2003 with Service Pack 1 and 2. And the vulnerability in and of itself is an issue with the way the agent parses information or actually goes through and then executes information. This as well causes a memory corruption exploit in how it actually parses the URL. And then again, with that memory corruption exploit, allows for code to be injected, and is where the remote code execution comes from.
And it has to do with the URL. Obviously, this means you have kind of, for that to happen, you have to be using a browser. If I'm using IE7, am I safe, or does this affect IE7 as well?
You know, if you're running IE7, it does mitigate the issue. So customers that do have IE7 with the default settings aren't at risk to this happening. So in IE7, in order to actually do this parsing, you would need to download the MS Agent ActiveX control. And all these things in IE7 are in a particular zone. So they're in the internet zone, and you actually have to opt into these features with IE7. So there's no automatic way to be exploited by default with IE7.
Gotcha. That's part of that, and that's part of the, that's one of the features the Internet Explorer just has in, built in, is the ActiveX opt-in feature.
That's correct.
Okay, cool. That's good. And the last one here we're going to talk about for this month is the 0721. So what does that have to do with? What are we looking at? I believe this is the one that actually is going to have is going to be affecting Vista as well.
That's correct. So this one, Kai, 0721, actually resolves three issues. The first is a critical that allows for remote execution. The next one is an important that allows for elevation of privilege. And the third one is a moderate, which allows for denial of service. So to talk a little bit more about the critical one has to do with the message box. And in the past, Kai, you know, we've talked about the service that runs, that's the CSRSS service that runs on your system. That's the client server runtime subsystem.
Yep, I've seen that before in my processes when I bring that up on my machine. I always wonder what that stood for.
That's correct. So anybody out there that wants to see what this is running on your machine, if you went to your the task manager and looked at this process, is you would see the CSRSS service. So this is actually an essential subservice, and it has to run at all times. And it's responsible for the Windows console. It's responsible for creating and deleting threads in your system. And it basically manages, you know, how your system works. So the scope of this vulnerability is remote code execution as well. And an attacker who successfully exploits this can actually remotely take control of your system. So they can install programs, they can view things, delete things, change things, they can create new accounts and then give those new accounts on your system full user rights. This particular exploit is obviously rated critical, so it's very important for customers to install the service update and get it out onto their client machines.
Okay, well, that sounds pretty horrible. I mean, so was this something that was in the wild running around out there, or is this something Microsoft found, or, is it, I guess I'm just concerned that, who's the first one to find out about this? Is it actually running around out there and people could actually be, this could be happening right now, or is this something that Microsoft discovered first?
So there was an initial responsible disclosure of this vulnerability, and it was later, released publicly, and the initial, vulnerability, we weren't seeing any exploit on it, but this is something that a researcher did bring to Microsoft. And, we've since taken that, like we always do when things are reported to us, to understand, is this the only thing that's vulnerable? Is there more to it? And, we do the additional research to make sure that, we're addressing not just this issue, but any related issues that we might find.
Okay. Well, I want to come back to what it means to be, what responsible disclosure actually means. We hear that a lot. Before I do that, let's just cover the last one here. 0722, what can you tell me about that?
So MS-0722 is a newly discovered, and this was privately reported as well. It's rated as important. It's an issue with the Windows kernel. And basically what we're seeing here is an elevation of privilege, and it's due to an incorrect use of page permissions. And basically what that means is when you're looking at physical memory and you map, where information is, they're kind of in pages, if you will. So in doing that wrong or incorrectly, a user who can exploit this can actually take control and get themselves elevated and get more rights than they're supposed to have. The caveat to this, which is why it's rated important, is this isn't a remote thing that happens. So an attacker physically has to be sitting in front of someone's machine in order to exploit this.
Okay, great. Well, that's good information. So basically we're looking at five updates coming out. What is it, four again?
Four are critical. One is important. Of the ones that are critical, three affect Windows. Of those, the three that are critical that affect versions of Windows, one of them, the MS-0721, does affect Windows Vista.
Okay, and how many affect Office 2007?
So none affect Office 2007.
Okay, that's good. All right, so here's my question. So let's talk a little bit about, we're going to talk a little bit about now the out of band and what that means and why we did it. And before we get started on that, can you just kind of briefly discuss what you mean by responsible disclosure as opposed to irresponsible disclosure?
Sure. So, as you know, and a lot of folks know, that there are researchers out there, all over the world, and it is their sole job to research software, and their specific area of research is security. So within that, they look at various software products that come out, and they do all kinds of reverse engineering and research, if you will, to try to discover potential ways to exploit that software. And that exploit can be through actual bugs that are found in the software. It can be a means of taking something that isn't actually a bug, but misusing it in a given way that then allows for an exploit. So it's all various ways, but regardless of what the vector or how you attack the system, the end result is some sort of compromise to the system. So that's what these folks do. And so Microsoft works with a large number of these researchers. And responsible disclosure is the idea that when someone finds a vulnerability in some way in anyone's product, that they go to that company, report their findings, work with that company to understand what they found, why, and then work through a fix for that, and then give that company the opportunity to come out with an update and then distribute that to their customers. And then in that case, what the companies normally do, and Microsoft certainly does every time, is when things are responsibly disclosed, we completely give credit to those particular researchers who found the vulnerability, and of course thank them for the time they spent in doing that. And the idea behind that is that you know, we feel that that is the best way to protect customers is responsible disclosure. The times that we've seen exploits happen, for the most part, are when things are what we call irresponsibly disclosed.
That's basically like, how's that different? I guess I don't see the difference between irresponsible disclosure and basically just putting out proof of concept on the internet somewhere.
Yep. So irresponsible disclosure is when someone finds information and then instead of reporting it to the company whose software it is, they just go on the internet, whether it's their own website or somebody else's website, and they just post all their findings. And sometimes they just post their research and say, you know, I found this and this is what it does. Other times they go so far as to actually create proof of concept code that proves how to actually, you know, exploit the software. The issue, and let me just say what the idea behind that is. The idea behind that is if it's out there and it's known, then that would facilitate somehow the company that whose software it is to come out with a fix quicker because now it's known. In reality, that's not necessarily the case. There are times where a fix is very simple. It's a simple fix. You know, a company can look at something and, you know, change a few lines of code or fix whatever the bug is and get an update out. But that's not always the case. Sometimes it takes more time than that. And it's not just a simple point fix. There could be some underlying issue with the software. There could be, you know, additional vulnerabilities that are now identified because of this one vulnerability.
Right.
And in those cases, it could take a company, and not just Microsoft, but any company, it could take them several months to get a fix out. And in that time that it takes them to get the fix out, customers are at risk. They're at risk from the moment it goes public to the moment that an update can go out. And so we encourage responsible disclosure not to allow companies to either hide vulnerabilities or take their time fixing them, but allow companies the time needed to come out with a quality, comprehensive fix that protects their customers and then doesn't put them at any unnecessary risk by just putting things out there in the public eye.
Right, and I think that's what we see too. You know, as I go around and talk to IT professionals and security executives, they always want us to make sure that we're doing everything we can to test this thing to like crazy against all these different products and all these different flavors of products we have. And this is just an example of that. That's why we don't just, you know, somebody's not sitting in their office in Redmond creating a patch and then dumping it on the internet for everybody to use. It goes through a rigorous testing process. And what you're saying is a lot of times the people that do irresponsible disclosure aren't aware, of all the really backroom stuff we're doing here at Microsoft to really make this thing work. It's not just like we're just sitting around. It's not like we're just blowing them off when they make the announcement, because we certainly, that wouldn't be responsible on our part.
That's correct.
That's why the person was not named who actually did the disclosure, correct?
That's correct. So the original disclosure about this was responsibly disclosed, and we had been working with this researcher. But then, you know, toward the end, there was just a difference of opinion about how to handle it. And the researcher felt that, you know, that they wanted to, you know, go public with it, which was, you know, certainly they're right, and they did. But again, one thing that people miss is that sometimes it's not, like you said, it's not about what it took to fix it, because it could be three lines of code that are, you know, a given fix. This wasn't that case, but it could be that way. But because, let's say it's in Windows or one of these other larger products, the amount of testing that we have to go through, depending on what type of test pass it is, literally can take several months. Because when customers, you know, in these large enterprises deploy that patch, they expect a certain level of quality for those patches that it's not going to interfere with other products that are running on their systems. And, you know, Microsoft is unique in that area in that it doesn't have the luxury that a lot of companies do that just can release a patch because their products don't interact with other features, or they're not a, you know, not an operating system. So they can, you know, they can get things out a lot quicker than we can in that regard.
Yep, and that's good. And so now we got that kind of underway. Can you tell me just a little bit about what the out of band patch? And here's, let's be clear. And this just drives me crazy because, you know, we always take a heat round for, you know, these, you know, Microsoft and security and your updates are always, you know what? Here's the deal. How many out of band updates have we actually ever released?
I believe that number is 3. So in the time that we've had this cycle and done this process of monthly releases. So if you recall in the past, we released updates all the time.
Right.
And then we moved to this monthly cycle based on customer feedback, because enterprises, you know, that people kind of don't realize is that it takes a lot for an enterprise to release a patch. They still have to go through their own testing and then deploy it across an enterprise. And that's a big cycle for them. So we went to this monthly cycle to make it more easy and more predictable for them to have a process that doesn't impact their business. So when we do an out-of-band, we take that very seriously, because to an enterprise, that means they have to, you know, churn up this whole release process that they have internally, that they normally do once a month. Now they have to do twice a month, let's say, if we actually do this. So we take these out-of-bands very seriously, and they've only happened 3 times. And the reason why we do out-of-bands, and this is something that, you know, we do try to educate folks on, about what merits an out-of-band. You know, if something is critical, so you could argue on one point and say, well, these are all critical, you should get them out right away. But there's a difference between something being rated critical and the risk that customers have. And this also goes to responsible disclosure. An update that we put out can be critical, but if it's responsibly disclosed and not necessarily known in the wild, so to speak, around the internet, then the risk of it being exploited, therefore the risk to customers, is very low. Because the only people that know about it, for instance, are the researchers that researched it potentially, and the company that owns the software. So while it's critical update, the risk to the customers is very low. Now in this instance, because it did go public, and when it did go public, the amount of exploits started to rise. And they started to rise because it went public.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, people are down there downloading the exploit and playing with it and trying to figure out how to make it work. And basically, this guy that released this is basically doing the work for the bad guys.
Yes. So because of that, and the risk went up, then we make a determination and say, okay, did the risk just go up? Well, yes, the risk just did go up. But did exploits go up? So when risk goes up, then that might change when we release the patch for a given month. So for instance, we had anticipated releasing the patch this coming Tuesday, the update already. So we would have already released this update on Tuesdays as part of the cycle. When it went public prior to that, the amount of exploits that were reported by customers increased to the point where we couldn't wait literally just the one more week, and we released it out of band early to protect customers because the exploits went up. So all those things factor into the decisions about when patches get released, if there's an issue with out of band. This is a dynamic thing. So it's not as if in the beginning we look at a vulnerability and say, okay, this is going to go out next month, or this is going to go out 5 months from now, or this is going to wait for, you know, a service pack. There is an initial triage of these things, but we factor in, you know, a lot of aspects. You know, how much testing needs to go into it? Are there customers at risk? Is it public or is it not public? Is there proof of concept code out there? And even if it's public, how much information is public? So some researchers, while they release they found a vulnerability, they don't release enough details to really do anything with. And so because of that, you know, they release that they did it, they release it's out there, but it will take time for, you know, people to try to figure out what that meant and potentially understand what the exploit was. So all those things are taken into consideration. But the end goal always is, you know, is the customer at risk, and what level of risk are they at? And if they're at, you know, a level of risk that leads to exploit, you know, all those things factor in. So anywhere along the line of that dynamicness of kind of what goes on can, you know, move an update forward, move an update back, cause an update to go out of band, such as this time.
Yeah. And just to mention this just briefly, Mark, you know, there's an organization that Microsoft's a member of, and there's other antivirus vendors that are part of that organization as well, where we all work together to kind of, and I believe, can you talk about what that is, what the name, I can't remember the name of it is off the top of my head, but can you kind of explain what that is, and we can kind of wrap it up from there?
Sure. So, you know, there are several industry organizations that, you know, folks do various things in it. And Microsoft has one that we call the Virus Information Alliance. And the folks that are in that are part of, you know, an overall group that we have called the Microsoft Security Response Alliance. And in there's the Virus Information Alliance. And there's also MBI, which is the Malware Alliance. But in essence, it's actually the same folks. It's all the companies that are in the anti-malware space. So while we are competitors in this space, we are also, you know, partners in this space. And so what we do with that group is we all share information. We share information about, you know, malware that we find. We share information about, you know, vulnerabilities, and we share information so all the different companies can make sure that they have, you know, signatures ready to protect against threats, or they understand, you know, what they need to do with their products. And so there's a large partner aspect that folks don't realize too that goes on with the research that gets done and the things that come into Microsoft that then get shared, you know, across the security industry. And I know people kind of look at, you know, Microsoft and its competitors as, well, they're competitors. They certainly don't cooperate with each other, but that's actually not the case. We actually cooperate, you know, quite extensively because we view security, you know, not as a Microsoft issue. You know, we view security as an industry issue, and it's the responsibility of all of us in the security industry to work together to protect customers everywhere, not just Microsoft customers, but all customers.
Okay, cool. So I just want to thank Mark for his time. And again, you guys, you can find out more about this on the Christopher's webcast. And don't forget to check out the MSRC blog, where we keep all that information up to date, and you can get all your good information there. So thanks again, Mark, for your time, and we'll see you next month.
Thank you, Kai. See you next month.
Mark Grieci speaking with Kai Axford on TechNet Radio. Remember to check out the TechNet webcast tomorrow. That's April the 11th, Wednesday, and it's titled Information About Microsoft April Security Bulletins. If you have any questions that you want to ask about these bulletins, that's a perfect time. And I put the direct link to the webcast so that you can go register for it or view the on-demand up on our site, microsoft.com/TNradio. Also, if you want to check out that MSRC blog that Kai mentioned, the address for that is http://blogs.technet.com/MSRC. If you want to leave me any feedback or show suggestions, go ahead and email tnradio@microsoft.com or give our listener line a call. Thanks for tuning in today. I look forward to next week for TechNet Radio. I'm Aurora Queen.
Have comments or want to request a story idea? Call us at 1-877-814-6506.